Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world. With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism, give it all a good hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining this crazy old lady for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's a woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. In a world where we ask, why is it that when Trump says tariffs, the globalists start jumping off cliffs? Do they see the shattering of their illusion? Do they fear being held accountable for creating the delusion? And since all the left-hand turns have resulted in a dead end, isn't it easier now to sort out foe from friend? But the brain worm that burrows through our heads every evening, why haven't we the people shown more outrage at all the government thieving? Welcome back, martini heads. I raise my glass to you with love and respect for having chosen the path of right-mindedness and common sense. Huzzah to you all. I am delighted to have you along for today's show. I've been thinking, you know, my darlings, it's not something I often do because it's terribly taxing, but, you know, for those who are awake, and there are, of course, many levels of being awake, the last few years have been an excruciating exercise in patience, in trust, in grace, watching friends, family, respected colleagues fall for this poisonous propaganda of the mainstream media. You know, it was quite the experience, if we're honest. I mean, let's be honest. A great many of us are experiencing some sort of post-traumatic stress thing. And, you know, I hate all those initials and all those little made-up things. But, you know, we used to call it shell-shocked. Shell-shocked battle fatigue was shell-shocked back in the day. And it's been difficult. We are all experiencing some sort of release from that trauma. Of course, we try to stay as centered as possible, but let's be honest. Warning people that you genuinely care for not to take this state-mandated pretend vaccine bullshit because it was designed to harm, not to heal, and then listening to them rant at you and call you crazy. Well, you know, actually that part is easy enough to handle. I mean, no part of my life has ever fit into the mainframe, and I'm sure many of you martini heads are the same. But, you know, but to them, your friends, your family, to see them crash with these dreadful turbo cancers that just like come up overnight with heart issues, with immune system issues and seizures, and then, you know, drop dead. I mean, how does one deal with that? I guess we deal with it in the same way we deal with everything. From our spirit sense, letting the spirit inhabit the human. And I, for one, am happy to see the end of this year and this messy period of transition. You know, it was an attempt to transition us to a totalitarian state, no less. And it failed, but only just. And to that I say, and we should all say, and remember to say all the time, mankind, we need to do better at the sovereignty game. Indeed. Well, I've gone off track again. So hello, if you're joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, this show is, I don't know what the show is. It's whatever I think it's going to be on that day. But we are politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. Darlings, we don't do woke shit on this show. We believe in common sense. We believe in common courtesy. We believe in common decency. We are many different people from many different parts of America and beyond. But I guess we best describe ourselves as people transitioning into spirit-centered humanism. And what does that mean? Does that mean we don't believe in God? No, that does not mean that. It doesn't mean that. It means we don't have any romantic notions of God being a man who sits on a cloud and fills a book called the Bible with countless contradictions, fallacies, and other fripperies, and all dressed up in some quaint notion that to know God of religion is the basis of all morality. Spirit, God, creation, oh, we're going to be playing with all of these words in the next 20 years or so. But to us, it's the glory of whatever you want to call that collective. It's a supreme cosmic intelligence. Consciousness exists. Do you want to know what consciousness is? Everybody just jumps through hoops figuring that out. It is simply the sum total of our inner awareness. So we know that we are part of a supreme cosmic intelligence, the allness, all that is, source. Is there one word that can encompass the vast, ever-unfolding mystery of creation? I think not. Not on this realm, anyway, and not at this time. So we call it God, which is immature, but we don't know how else to address such magnificence. And that's probably because we don't fully accept that we are an intrinsic part of this God thing. Darlings, once we self-realize, I don't think we will have any problem with the terminology. Well, today is a Wednesday, December the 18th, 2024 CE. That would be chaos era. And it's my last show before Christmas Day. So I'm going to go with a Yuletide Yahoo theme. So let's just kick back and have some fun. And I'll try not to be too serious. And throughout this show, we're going to have some weird and wacky tidbits from the anus of history. But we're going to confine them to sort of Yuletide season things. But we must start off, as we always do, with quack. Questions, answers, and comments. Did you notice the vibrato on my kazoo? I am definitely improving. In fact, just before the show, Nancy, my producer, was complimenting me on my kazoo-sosity. Let's take a look at what came in today in our little fishbowl of perpetual perplexity. Darlings, martini heads everywhere, if you would like to share the results of your sparkling neural pathways with martini heads across the known universe and possibly the unknown universe, send your emails to me, Ani@aniabadissian.com, or if you prefer snail mail, Cosmic Ani, P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, U.S. of A. And please remember to let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as Omit Personal Details. Okay, let's shake up that fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, shaky, I got a shaky, 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 shaky. Let's just pick something. Our first missive is from Kiri Kibalion. Yes, I'm sure that's your real name, Kiri. And Kiri asks, Ani, if you were stuck on a desert island and could have only one book, which one would it be? An interesting question. Kiri, I imagine it would be a book titled How to Survive and Thrive on a Desert Island. And if such a book does not exist, I imagine I would write it while on the aforementioned island. How would I write it, though? Would I have a ballpoint with me? What if I just was thrown off a ship and I didn't have my handbag with me? I mean, I could, given enough time, make paper from the bark of the coconut tree, assuming there's a coconut tree, and I could bleed some squids for their ink, and I could sharpen a twig to use as a writing tool. But how would I get people to read it? Would I just wait for future archaeologists to dig it up? Or would I pray for an empty bottle and a cork to come ashore? I don't know. If I were to get stuck on a desert island, I do hope there's more than one food group available to me. That's really what I'm getting at here. I don't really care for coconuts, to be honest. I'll drink the coconut water, but the flesh doesn't do much for me. I'll have lots of fish, of course, which is good. I prefer beef, but catching and preparing fish is easier than hunting and preparing a bull, isn't it? Especially, you know, on a desert island where you probably won't have any bulls. Anyway, thank you for the question, Kiri. I hope that my answer has greatly improved the quality of your life. Moving on, what else came in today into the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity? this was lovely. This is like one of those triptych postcards. It opens up like one of those Monets that you see in the museums, right? And inside it was a beautiful handwritten letter written with ink, an actual handwritten with fountain pen. Wow. And it's from Ryan in Exeter in the UK. And Ryan says, I was on the Spiritual Salon Zoom event you held for your Brit peeps last month. And I have to say, you have missed your calling as a stand-up comedian. I was expecting a serious and somber affair. Instead, I almost soiled myself laughing. We can't wait for the next one and hope our world will start to heal by then. I am writing not just to compliment you, but to ask a question. Why don't you start your own version of a church? One that focuses on the path of self-realization as a natural progression of evolution. I am trying to say that the way you explained it to us was so simple and so brilliant that by the end of the event, I had already shifted to a place where I took my cosmic nature for granted. No doubts about it, and it felt so calm, almost neutral, as if to say, yes, this is how it's supposed to feel. Natural. I appreciate those words, Ryan. I appreciate them very much indeed. Thank you. And as it happens, it's probably why I talked about it so much on that group, I'm about to revive a project I was going to launch towards the end of 2019, around about when that COVID thing happened and everything got shelved. In a nutshell, and I am going to start this up this year. I'm not quite sure of the finishing details yet, but in a nutshell, I call it the Fellowship of the Reclaimed Mind. And it is a meeting place for spirit-centered humanists, folks who see themselves as part of an ever-expanding, ever-evolving cosmos, folks who know they are part of something greater than their individualized portion of it. You know, we all know we're part of some supreme cosmic intelligence. We understand we are an intrinsic part of the creation process, and as such, we are brimming with untapped potential. And that excites us. We are awed by creation and in awe at being part of it. You know, the capacity for growth, to become the best versions of ourselves, to create new thoughts and new things, which in turn will inspire others to push the envelope and blaze new trails into realms unknown. I know right now we're having what we think is a massive reinvention of Christianity, etc. And I mean, I don't really have a problem with that because, you know, life is whatever life is. And I do know that Emmanuel, Jesus, was real. I also know that his story is not told in the Bible. But sooner than we think, religion will be part of history and mythology class. But that doesn't alter our true nature, because what does religion have to do with our true nature? every problem we have today is because of ego programming. And religion feeds this. I can and I will argue till the moo-moos come home. But religion feeds the voice of self-doubt, the voice of self-sabotage, the voice of self-loathing. And those programs, they run deep and long. And I'm not just talking about Christianity. Now, self-realization, by the way, is not some highfalutin concept. It simply means that you have overcome ego programming. You identified it. You confronted it. You overcame it. And now the only voice in your head is yours in alignment with all that is. Source energy, the energy. You've got to call it something. So that's where our focus should be, self-realization, because that's when life really begins to get spicy. It gets spicy and exciting because there's no devilish ego demons fighting for space in your head. It's all you in alignment with all that is. Now, right now, we are being played like puppets on strings by a handful of sociopaths who have us playing the my profit is better than your profit game over and over and over again. Now, I know you're all enjoying your resurge of Christianity and whatever we're doing, but you know, I cannot begin to describe how far from self-realization that is. We are toddlers fighting over toys, shitting in our diapers, and then having the audacity to ask God why our butts smell so much. I will maintain this over and over again. I don't, you know, whether you agree with me or not, I'm not arguing. It's just, this is my thing. This is the fellowship of the reclaimed mind. This is how I think we will be transitioning going forward. In the same way as the New Age churches, the New Thought churches, formed a pool of energy so that people could start moving away from old time religion without losing the big picture that we are all part of something bigger. We do not need religion to learn moral values. The knowledge of good and evil is hot wired into our humanity because our humanity is not separate from any non-physical part of us. I could even argue that having religion causes one to be immoral, to do things in the name of God that a secular human would find abhorrent. I mean, let's be honest. And, you know, this is a wonderful time for you to check your triggers, by the way. If you're listening to this and you're seething, try to resist the temptation to hate me just for having an alternative point of view. Try to do some breathing. And see perhaps that, you know, other people have points of view as well. And yours might, well, I'm always holding space for me to change my mind. I hope you do the same. In the Bible, God clearly has serious mental health issues. In one hand, he's all light and unconditional love and empathy and grace and smoochy-woochy, all loving God. But, you know, that's unless you piss him off, either as a race or as an individual, and then it's bam and biff and smite and smash and maybe the odd curse on your progeny and future generations and maybe some plagues and some floods and killing firstborns and stuff. No wonder people are confused because their God is presented as a lunatic, ergo mundus est insanus locus. The world is a crazy place. And it was said throughout the land, lunacy begat lunacy. That's from Fallacies 24/7. In the name of God, which is not God's name, but anyway, in the name of God, things that are done in the name of God. Take, for example, killing someone. And, you know, you could say to someone, I want you to do this abhorrent deed in the name of God, because if you do it in the name of God, it is a good and noble deed. Really? Really? If we take God, the traditional concept of God, out of the equation, would a sane person commit the deed? Hey, buddy, this guy, and I've just picked a religion at random. Do not get your knickers in a twist. So, hey buddy, this guy refuses to convert to Islam. Would you chop his head off, please? The sane response would be, WTF, you stick bastard, give me that machete while I call the site police. So, you know, if my humanity knows it is wrong to take such an action, what could possibly convince me to do the opposite, to take a life for an opposing, stop drinking so fast, Ani, take a life for an opposing point of view? Apparently, you get away with it if you pull the God gets me out of jail free card. Now, where was I going with this? The Fellowship of the Reclaimed Mind. I think as mankind matures, evolves, completes a thought form, we won't feel the need to personify the process of creation in order to relate to it. I mean, I don't need to feel warm and fuzzy and protected because of my knowledge of being divine or cosmic, because I know safety is as much an illusion as danger is. And as an individualized spark or soul or part of all that is, I am not inferior to or dependent on a higher power to guide or to supervise me. My understanding is that I am a tiny but complete molecular structure of the allness, and therefore I am that which I am. And darlings, that's where people become uncomfortable. And that's where growth begins. And that's what the upcoming Fellowship of the Reclaimed Mind, still in formation, but definitely coming to a town near me in 2025. There is this little backdoor programming that we all have. And we're all terrified these days to open the door to the subconscious. But deep down, if you've been told that you were born in original sin, even if it doesn't make sense to you, if that's been drummed into you, and these concepts of worthiness and God's mental health issues about what's right and what's wrong, you're always going to default to not feeling that you could ever achieve total alignment with all that is. And I'm here to tell you that the only thing that you're here to achieve is the remembrance of your total alignment with all that is. Because from that point of power, you could drop yourself onto any damn planet, in any galaxy, in any universe, and you will survive and thrive. So thank you, Ryan. If we all remember Ryan about 10 hours ago, who sent this letter, and thank you, Ryan, for the letter and taking me down my own mini rabbit hole there. And I love to the Brit peeps. I'll see you all again, I think, in March. Merry Christmas to you all and a blessed Yuletide to your Wiccan members. For those, this is a private group that I see once every 3 months from the UK. And it's a lovely mix. And they describe themselves as a mix of old gods, new gods, and bored old farts who drink strong cider. And I thought to myself, these are my people. I must embrace them. And, you know, we meet for a spiritual salon via Zoom about once every 3 months. So huzzah for the Brit peeps, and I hope you get rid of that wanker Keir Starmer soon. What else came in this week? Yes, this is an email from Caleb in Biloxi, Mississippi. And Caleb says, I was upset to hear you say on your last show that pork gives you arthritis. I love bacon and I love pork ribs. I eat them most days and I still feel fine. Caleb, darling, I'm so sorry if I upset you. I did not say pork gives you arthritis, by the way. That is not what I said. I said factory farmed pork has the same vibration as arthritis. Boars and wild hogs are a different matter. I myself love a bit of bacon. But I rarely eat it because when I do, I have to splurge for the good stuff. And the good stuff is very expensive. Now, you're in Mississippi. That is considered the South. And I know the hog is a sacred animal in American southern states. And I wouldn't dream of telling people to stop eating it. Just avoid the farmed stuff and, of course, cook it well. And let's take one more from the fishbowl before we move on to weird and waggy Christmas tidbits and my silly poem and my cocktail du jour, and which I've drunk most of already. Okay, this one is from Omit Personal Details. Ani, what do you know about the murder of Igor Kirillov? Aha. Well, I know it wasn't me, and I regret to inform you that Interpol does not consult me on such matters, so I don't know any more than you do. But as early as this time last year, or earlier sometime in 2023, I think, he started talking about how the US and Big Pharma planned to rule the world by manufacturing all sorts of, contagions and biological crises. And he also told the world, I think at that time, that all of this evidence had been submitted to the United Nations many times, but of course it was vetoed by one of the nations that can't refute the documentation, and that nation happened to be the United States of America. So why did they kill him? Could it be because he actually found a paper trail linking the US government to the Russian mafia oligarchs, to pharma, various NGOs? He has paperwork that proves that COVID was manufactured to generate profit. That's why they killed him, darling. He was exposing the biggest crime in history, which some people are still defending. I don't know who killed him, but obviously it's the deep state. So RIP, dear sir, and please continue to guide us from the other side when you feel ready to do so. And oh, there's just one more question here. There's just one more question, and from the fishbowl, and then I can clear out the fishbowl and wait for next week. And this is for Goethe, who writes, "I am not sure about Elon Musk. Are you?" Let me take a sip of my drink here. That is actually very nice. I should slow down on that. Goethe, I am sure of only one thing, and that is that life is eternal. But now that I think on it, how do I know that for sure? Can anyone know anything for sure? Perception is unique to the individual. Maybe we just think we are all seeing the same thing in the same way. I mean, maybe people are staring and going, oh yes, it's Mount Rushmore. It looks the same to everyone. But does it? Oh yes, it's in all the tourist and history books. It's the same. But if perception is unique to the individual, how can we be sure we all see it in the same way? To answer your question, Goethe, which I'm not doing very well right now, I'm going with white hat Elon in a dark MAGA sweatshirt. I am as sure as I can be that he serves the goodness and not the badness. In my experience, geniuses, which I am not one, but I have worked with many, don't think too hard on morality until they are forced to. So I'm glad he took a seat at T's table. I think he'll do very well there, and will do very well because of him. And darlings, that is it for Quack. Thanks to everyone who wrote in, because, well, we wouldn't have much of a show without you. So keep these questions coming. It makes a huge difference, by the way, to some of our more remote listeners who may feel a tad disenfranchised in their communities. You know, that's why we started this show. Because I was getting, we started the show because Nancy Hopkins of Cosmic Reality Radio asked me if I wanted to do a podcast. And I said, yay, I do. And I did, because I receive letters from all over America from people who are stuck in either what they think are liberal communities, or they're in some sort of small podunk town where everyone's too tired from working at the mill to have a thought at the end of the day. And I just wanted something where other rabid libertarians who are spirit-centered and who are patriots could just come together and just have a place where we could just chill. So, you know, that's great. That's why we did it. So you don't feel disenfranchised. So, you know, patriots out there, if you have something on your minds and you want to share it with your tribe, go for it. You're not alone in this time of transition. And there is, in this time of transition, no such thing as right or wrong thought. Let's just listen to each other. And if we're talking bullshit, we'll tell each other. But let's listen to each other. We are approaching a new golden age. Huzzah! Hello! It's not business as usual. It's the beginning of an era of new ideas. A new way of seeing and doing and being. So do not be shy. Share your thoughts with us, and cheers to you all. And now, my darlings, despite several cease and desist letters, I insist on keeping this segment in a little pat of poetry. Yes, folks, after a hard day's shamaning, I like nothing better than coming home, putting my feet up, having a nice cup of tea or a small drinky poo, and writing amazing non-peer-reviewed poetry. And today's offering is titled, I haven't got a title. I haven't given it a title. Well, maybe you guys can come up with some ideas for me after you listen to the poem. This is just a little something I wrote the other day, because I do have a Substack now, by the way, and the name of the Substack is Ani Abedissian, surprise, surprise. So I have to come up with content every single day, which makes me prolific, but not everyone's an absolute gem. But it's surprising. If you actually do sit down and write every single day, you will get better. So this is my poem of no name for the holiday season. Here we go. I have vague recollections of an appetizer tray, a festive board of cut meats with pickles and relish and other things, and some sort of dip with heat. I believe I enjoyed the soup course. I am a big fan of le potage. Then they passed the bread basket, such a beautiful mirage. I could have stopped with soup and bread, but the entrees looked appealing. Beef Wellington, with a side of spuds, washed down with hot Darjeeling. The salmon dish looked very nice, all dressed in lemon and dill. If I sneak a little bite, will my digestion go downhill? I hope I show restraint when the pudding cart comes around. I want to try them all, but do not wish to dumbfound. Who are all these nice folks by me, smiling in strange ways? And how on earth I got here is lost in time and haze. Somewhere between the cocktails and wine with every course, the spirit me and the human me somehow got divorced. The last thing I need right now is a sugar-filled confection, but oh my God, what do I see? Chocolate souffle, and it's done to perfection. Oh, darlings, I hope you enjoyed that. I am happy to say I won't be having any such issues this Christmas because I have cleaned up my diet and, oh my God, compliant. I have never been this compliant about anything in my life. I have lost a bunch of weight. I'm totally committed to MAHA, Make America Healthy Again. And I'm going to be using my transformation from chubster to diva as an example. I am so excited, people. I'm feeling so much better. I'm lighter. I also hate post-holiday sales, you know, at the malls and all of that. But this year, I will have to go because none of my clothes fit me well enough for me to risk leaving the house. Oh, happy day. How wonderful it is. And I did it all in time for Christmas. Will I break my diet for Christmas? No, I won't. until I'm 100% at my proper weight and 100% healthy and all of that, I'm not going to do it. I can enjoy Christmas because of the company. I love the whole feel of Yuletide. I love the songs, the carols. I'm not even a Christian. I just love Christmas. But the party doesn't have to be on the table for me. It can be everything else. Yeah, I'll sneak in half a glass of wine, maybe. Maybe I'll have a teaspoon of a dessert. But that's it. Just a taste. And I probably won't even do that. Am I being smug? You know, I hope I don't sound smug. I've been overweight a good 20 years, and I'm no longer overweight. And I just can't tell you how happy that makes me. And where we go, one, we go all. So if you're a chubster and you need help losing weight, it's an addiction. It's not necessarily an addiction to food. It's an addiction. Go to my website, go to my Ego Busters page and sign up for my Ego Busters group. Read all about it. You will not be sorry. It's a fun group, and we're really helping each other to clean up our act. And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and all of your household pets, it's time for weird and wacky Yuletide tidbits from the anus of history. So here's a little Christmas story that my partner dug up for me, which I thought was quite charming and sad at the same time. So Christmas Day, 1921, a Swedish immigrant quietly wheeled his hot dog stand to a street corner in Boston's North End and distributed 500 free hot dogs to hungry children. Axel Björklund was no stranger to poverty. He barely made ends meet himself, but he wanted to give back. His cart was soon swamped with hundreds of shivering children wearing tattered clothing that did little to stave off the cold. Their hungry faces beamed when Axel handed them a steaming hot dog. Eventually, the food was gone, but Axel's determination to repeat the event wasn't. The hot dog Santa tradition was born, and over the next 8 years, Axel gave away some 10,000 hot dogs before he died in 1930. He was born in Gothenburg, Sweden, August the 6th, 1869. Axel Björklund emigrated to America in 1889, eventually settling in Boston's North End neighborhood. The area had become a melting pot of immigrants, most of whom were impoverished as they struggled to establish lives in a new country. And the Spanish flu pandemic hit the North End particularly hard, leaving families even more destitute and many children orphaned. He tried marriage, but it was short-lived. It failed. Axel found himself alone. He decided to start a hot dog stand on the busy corner of Blackstone and Hanover streets, and soon found that it brought joy back to his life. Seeing hungry children on the streets, he vowed that no one would go hungry if he had food to give away. His first Christmas hot dog giveaway in 1921 was so successful that Axel decided to expand, and in 1922, he doubled the number of hot dogs to 1,000. His hot dog giveaway grew with each year until he distributed 3,000 annually. The children, of course, loved Axel and nicknamed him Hot Dog Santa. Newspapers nationwide and as far away as Sweden reported his generous hot dog tradition. Axel's annual Christmas Day hot dog giveaway eventually moved to New Year's Day, but it was an event the children anticipated all year. As Axel's generosity expanded, so did his health challenges. He was plagued with rheumatism. You know, people, you really shouldn't be eating a lot of hot dogs. That pork meat is not very good for you. Moving on, which led to frequent hospitalizations. His finances struggled too, and he could no longer pay his rent. But not wanting to end the hot dog giveaway, he appealed to the public to help him continue the tradition. So we're at December 1928 now, just before the annual hot dog giveaway. Axel's landlady kicks him out because he hadn't paid his rent. Well, the Salvation Army, the Sally Alley, they stepped in to help, but Axel was broke. And the next 2 years, Axel went between the poorhouse and to some place, and it was a home for the aged, and he obtained temporary lodging from generous benefactors, but he was a bit of a popcorn. He was popping here and popping there, trying to find somewhere where he could get shelter. But he was so committed to this hot dog thing that despite his circumstances, 1929, he did participate in his final hot dog giveaway. November the 10th, 1930, Axel Björklund, the hot dog Santa, passed away, penniless and alone, at a Massachusetts hospital. He had no relatives and was set to be buried in a potter's field when newspapers published word of his death. Citizens stepped forward, offering to contribute to a fund and give Axel a proper burial. The Swedish Charitable Society coordinated something, and Axel was laid to rest in the Cambridge Cemetery. What a lovely and sad little story. And this story was found on the blog page of newspapers.com and was written by Jenny Ashcraft. And we are very grateful to you for your contribution. Well, Axel, RIP, I don't eat hot dogs, but if I did, I would honor you by eating one. And when I can eat processed meat again, which will be never, I will maybe have a German bratwurst in your honor. There we are. All right, let's move on with more weird and wacky Christmas tidbits. Oh, Axel, oh, it made me so sad. You died alone and penniless and, oh, Anyway, let's move on to something happier. Eggnog. Do we know the exact origins of eggnog? Not really. We know it has a 13th century English root, you know. It was initially a bevy for aristocrats. It was very big in colonial America, very big indeed. You know, the word itself doesn't sound very tasty, does it? Drinking egg, it just doesn't sound very, very tasty. We don't know if it is derived from the Old English word nog, which means strong beer, or is it derived from noggin, which is a word we use for a small cup, and that was more in the 16th century. Noggin, of course, sometimes we actually call people's heads a noggin. Another version attributes the name to American colonists who referred to thick drinks as grogs. So it's possible that we get eggnog as a combination of egg and grog. But by the time it appeared in print, finally, the words were mashed together to create this eggnog. So, you know, that's where we are. When was the first time we saw eggnog in print? Because the written use of the word didn't really occur till the late 1700s. And we've traced it back to a poem that was written by a Maryland minister and some chap called Jonathan Boucher, who was a friend of George Washington's, by the way. And this was written around 1774, although it wasn't published until 30 years later. So it was 1788, the New Jersey Journal article. It describes a young man with a voracious appetite who enjoyed 30 raw eggs, a glass of eggnog, and another of brandy sling. So, wow, that's a very big eggnog. I think eggnog came from probably monks, monasteries, medieval monks, probably back in Britain. There was a drink back in the day called a posset, P-O-S-S-E-T, and it was warm ale. You know, it was a beer without the fizz, right? Warm ale. And it was a punch that they put herbs and spices in, but they also put eggs in it and figs. That gives it gives it some emulsification. And over time, the possets were not just ale with eggs. Over time, they changed into various milk drinks and wine punches. So I think probably it's just a variation of that posset. But by the 17th century, they added sherry to it. In fact, in England, sherry is the primary ingredient to just about any beverage. And sherry was in many, many different eggy beverages, let's put it that way. Mainly the aristocracy, really, because milk, eggs and sherry were scarce commodities in Europe at the time. But when it came, the eggnog, the eggy, noggy, groggy, eggy, groggy, noggy, when all of that came to the colonies, well, we had evolved here in the colonies. And we actually liked rum, not sherry, because we got rum from, you know, the Caribbean islands. And it was also, that rum was considerably less expensive than brandy, because all of that stuff had to be shipped from England. So I'm trying to trace the origins of eggnog here, not doing a very good job. But the rum version really became the eggnog drink for all classes of colonial Americans. Is it actually a Christmas tradition, though? When did it become a familiar fixture during the holiday season across the colonies and eventually, you know, the emerging country that we know today as the United States of America? It was made frequently without alcohol. And every region, of course, had its own personal flavor. In the South, we are told people preferred their own moonshine whiskey over the rum, for example. You know, it is said that George Washington devised his own recipe, but that only the most courageous guests would partake. George Washington and his boys, I've had a look at some of the bar tabs they ran up in the day. My God, those boys could drink. I think he had Washington's nog was a boozy batch of brandy, rye, whiskey, Jamaican rum and sherry. And then you put all the rest of the noggy stuff in it. Interesting. Anyway, in the early days, eggnog was served warm. But these days, it's cold. It's cold and you can put anything you want in it. Brandy, rum, Madeira wine, sherry or hard cider. I'm very fond of putting Harvey's Bristol Cream sherry in my nog. But man, that stuff is rich, very, very rich. Anyway, there you go. Countries all over the world have some sort of version of eggnog grog, egg grog nog. We all like those thicker drinks in the winter, don't we? Well, not me necessarily. I'll take a martini over just about anything. Fruitcakes. Moving on to fruitcakes. Canada has been on my mind lately, probably because Trump keeps referring to it as the 51st state of the United States of America, and probably because pretty boy Trudeau is about to get his pretty little ass kicked out of there. Everything's collapsing, isn't it? Is that what the Great Awakening is all about, my darlings? Everything's going back to what we are now terming as right wing, but it's actually common sense. All of that left and right shit is going to go away down the line. I think that Le Pen is probably going to get back in France. I think that the Irish are going to take their country back. I think that the English are going to take their country back. I think that strange things are happening in the Middle East, but we should be okay with that because we need to make it possible for people to go back home. And all I can say is just wait till we get inaugurated. You are going to see so much change, so much quickly. Why was Canada on my mind? All those reasons. And also because Canada eats 3.5 million fruitcakes each year. Well, let me rephrase that. Canada buys 3.5 million fruitcakes each year. I don't know if they're all eaten. That's a lot of fruitcakes. But no surprise there, because their PM is a fruitcake. And he's on the way out, and he needs a good kick in the rear. Personally, for what he has done to Canada, I think he needs to be put against a wall and have 3.5 million fruitcakes thrown at him. But that's just me, because I'm a soft and fluffy and compassionate and warm-loving human being, as always. So I was looking at the lights on my Christmas tree this morning. They're so pretty. I'm very easily seduced by pretty little lights and shiny objects. The first person to string electric lights on a Christmas tree was one Edward Johnson, and that was in 1882, and he was a colleague of Thomas Edison. So that's very fitting, I think. You know, back in the day, the Yuletide period, the Christmas period wasn't just as sensible as it is today. There was the Lord of Misrule. You know, we're talking about the 16th and 17th centuries and the medieval period before that. It was free for all. If you were a wealthy person, you either locked up your house and left and went to the country, or you hired security, because it was absolutely a free-for-all. It was a dangerous time. A lot of drinking, a lot of debauchery, and just not safe. So Oliver Cromwell, one of the roundheads, one of the Puritans, he tried to hit the mute button in Christmas on 1647. In fact, he did. And while the roundheads were in control, Christmas was a silent, solemn affair. But, interesting, they couldn't keep it without a monarchy. They got King Charles II in, and he unmuted Christmas. So we had Christmas back in 1660. But I think by that time, it wasn't as crazy as it used to be in the earlier medieval period. When was the first public Christmas tree lit up in America? 1912, I found out, in New York City. And that was in Madison Square Park. And it was 60 feet tall. So quite tall, really, especially for 1912. A skyscraper, you would say, of the tree world. Talking about Christmas trees, I remember when I was British, before I became American, Norway sends London a Christmas tree every year, every single Christmas, to thank the British for their support during World War II. And wow, and they usually send like a 20-meter spruce tree. Norway, very decent of you for doing that sort of thing. What else? Let's go to Asia. Well, Arnie, there are no Christians in Asia. Well, you know, there are, actually. But you don't have to be a Christian to enjoy Christmas. I am not a Christian. I love Christmas. I love the season. Japan. KFC is what everybody eats on Christmas Eve. It is a beloved tradition. And that's because in the 1970s, KFC started their finger-licking festive marketing campaign. And now, on December 24th, in Japan, it is the thing, the norm. Everybody goes out and buys a special Christmas bucket of chicken. Isn't that exciting? That's good to know. If I ever find myself in Japan over Christmas, I may have that. We'll see. All right, who's going to kiss somebody under the mistletoe? Who's going to kiss somebody under the mistletoe? Own up. If you do, good for you. Don't forget the mouthwash. Don't spread germs. But the mistletoe means dung on a twig. It's true. Viscum album, dung on a twig, in Anglo-Saxon, not in Latin. According to the National Wildlife Federation, mistletoe grows by spreading through bird droppings. Well, how fun is that? What else can we know? What else happens around Christmas? People get divorced around Christmas. I've heard that. Really, you just couldn't handle a whole year together. So you waited until the period of reconciliation to actually break up. Funny little tidbit I found. Data analyst, a chap called David McCandless, he analyzed more than 10,000 Facebook status updates and found that approximately 2 weeks before Christmas is the most likely time that a man and woman will dump their significant other. So I suppose if you can make it to December 25th, you're probably okay. But if your relationship is on the rocks and you are approaching Christmas, try to sort it out before the holiday season so you don't ruin everyone's Christmas. What else? The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. Do we need all these organizations? I wonder if we do. Anyway, whoever they are, they estimate there are approximately 15,000 decoration-related emergency room visits each holiday season. Yes, people, all those wobbly ladders, wobbly step stools, and all sorts of things that we only check once a year, I think we need to be a little bit more careful than we are. That's quite a lot, actually. I was hanging up decorations. You fall, you break your leg, it ruins your Christmas. And what's our last little tidbit for the day? Who sent the most Christmas cards in the world? And which individual? And there's a chap called Werner Erhard. He is the record holder for sending the most Christmas cards in a single year. In December 1975, he sent 62,824 cards. And with standard postage at that time, that would have cost him $8,167.12, which is about 31,000 in today's dollars. Isn't that crazy? Well, interesting. Oh, I have one more. Someone sent this in to me today. The biggest Christmas stocking. Yes. And that was by an emergency services organization called Pubblica Assistenza Carrara Eccezione in Carrara, Tuscany, Italy. The final size of their Christmas stocking was over 168 feet in length and more than 70 feet in width from heel to toe. Well, I wonder what they filled that with. Quite a lot, really, I imagine. My darlings, I don't know. I'm just so excited about Christmas. I'm just really excited. I'm going to be rereading A Christmas Carol, a novella by, of course, Charles Dickens, first released in 1843. And it's the story of a sour and stingy chap called Ebenezer Scrooge. And it's all about his ideological, ethical, and emotional transformation after he receives supernatural visitations from Jacob Marley, his former partner, and also the ghosts of Christmas's past, present, and yet to come. Dickens is an exceptional writer. No one writes prose the way that Dickens writes prose. And he wrote this specifically hoping to teach people how self-serving, insensitive people can be converted, they can transform into compassionate, socially conscious members of society. And each of the ghosts has a story. It's like a little parable. I recommend that you read that. And when you do read it, you'll be a fan of Dickens. No one can do things with the English language that Dickens can. God rest your soul, Dickens. He's just brilliant. My darlings, I think that's it for today. I'm about to finish my drink. Who am I kidding? I finished it ages ago. And that always means the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. I always do. Who wouldn't want a chance to hang out with like-minded folks, cocktails in hand, schmoozing? What could be better? Today's real-life cocktail was a peppermint martini, for which there exists multiple recipes. This is the one I use when we have guests. It's quick and easy and tasty. 5 fluid ounces of vanilla vodka, 2 fluid ounces of white creme de menthe, 1/2 an ounce or a tiny bit more fluid ounce of peppermint schnapps. Get your vodka, your creme de menthe, your peppermint schnapps. Pour it all into a shaker with cracked ice. Cover the cocktail shaker, of course. Shaky, shaky really well. Hard shake. 30 seconds. Really blend those flavors. While you do that, get someone to wet and dip your martini glass rim in crushed candy cane or another type of sweet sprinkle. Have that ready, actually, before you start your shaky, shaky. And then this is enough for 2. So you can make 2 or you can make 1 and give yourself a refill. Just strain and pour. You don't have to strain. Just pour it and garnish it with a peppermint stick if desired, and enjoy. And remember, folks, cocktails are great if they are an occasional treat. If you use top shelf ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, one drink, uno uno, is all you need. I'm Arnie, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was A Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Shout out to mysticalwares.com for arranging the intergalactic distribution of this show. Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Until we meet again, watch out for Project Bluebeam and fake Jesus and fake ET and fake God knows what else holograms. Stand up against the establishment at every opportunity. And above all, my darlings, always let the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Abedissian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.